This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we are talking about The Rings of Power, Season 2!
Yeah, baby! This is what we've been waiting for 2 years. Has it been 2 years?
It has. 2 whole years.
Oh my god. I thoroughly enjoyed the first season. It was phenomenal. I loved how they dealt with Tolkien's world. And what's crazy was the first season got some negative feedback, just blatant racism, really, towards the cast. But we just want to watch something great, and that's what the show is. It's just so much fun, but also to explore characters in grave detail as well. Season 2 does that on a different level, which is great. Glad to see the cast back, glad to see different locations, and yeah.
I agree. It's just wonderful to be back in this world. I actually gave Season 1 a rewatch, and I gotta say, second time around, it works even better. I loved it so much, and I'm really hoping that we can kind of express just how amazing this second season was, because I agree, I thought it was so amazing to be back and wonderful to go deeper. And since season one, it has been amazing to see support from fans who have loved this show and also from Amazon themselves. Amazon have been vocal about embracing this cast and letting know that this world and this universe is for everybody. I mean, you compare that to other franchises. I'm bringing up The Acolyte again. I did have my very first hit tweet a couple months ago where
Oh my God.
It's legendary. But it's great to see this show, that ton of backlash season one, as you said. Season two happens. It lets it grow. The audience has grown this year. I mean, already, like, the amount of people who've watched season two is insane. And season three is all but confirmed. With the 5 seasons that they had planned, it seems like we're going to get that story. And I'm so happy that that is something that they are letting... They're letting them cook.
Yeah, they're letting them cook. And you get to see that a lot in season two. Because especially what season one was building upon, we were just getting tons of world building, which is amazing. And season two goes beyond than that to explore Sauron as a character and many tragic characters as well. So it's like, you got to give a show like this a chance. Because if you worried about season one, it's like, okay, something's not building right here. It's a bit of a slow burner what they're trying to do. But season two just makes things possible for what's about to come for season three. And again, people just need to give Acolyte a second chance for the story and to explore those characters. And it's so important to those stories to grow. But for Rings of Power, thankfully, we have season two, which is amazing.
Yeah, no, I mean, already, the big thing for me going into this season that I was worried about was that they had moved filming locations from New Zealand to the UK. And obviously, New Zealand has been the home of Middle Earth on screen for all the films and for season one. And I got to add, still a lot of the wide shots and sweeping shots are all from stuff they took in season one, so still from New Zealand. But I was worried this season wouldn't look as good. I was worried that maybe it would look like a bit of a quality decline. Maybe the budget wouldn't be as high.
The British,
the British quality is so much further down.
Oh, the British quality, yeah.
I'm an idiot, basically, because this show just looks marvelous. Like, every shot just is dripping with so much practicality, and everything from the sets to the costumes to the prosthetics. I remember on our last video, we got a comment that was like, all you care about are the orcs and how good they look. It's like, yeah, I do care about how good the orcs are, because they look amazing. And that continues in this season. In this season, we actually get to follow an orc called Glug. It's brilliant to have a face to a lot of the orcs and have it be like a real horrible mangled face and everything. I was just stunned by this show and how it was put together the whole time. They did not let a single thing slide. I just, like, phenomenal stuff.
It's great because we talked about Jurgen 2 last week, and they didn't commit to what they needed to do for the story. But here, they've committed to what they wanted to show from last season to here, to continue stories, to explore about the Stranger, to explore about Galadriel, and to explore about the start of the Rings, which is so fascinating as well. And to see some of the stuff that will be important for Lord of the Rings as well, which is like, oh my god, I know that thing. It's like that. It just becomes a really important thing. And also I've been looking at Tolkien's Silmarillion as well, which is so intriguing because you get to see that to come into place as well. So it is just great to see this to come to screen again.
Yeah, this show is building so excitingly. I remember when season one came out, one of my criticisms was they kind of just build the rings really fast. Like, episode 8, they're like, and here's the rings. And it's like, okay, great. But in this season, immediately we begin to unpack, what does that mean? Like, the morals of that, the ethics of it, the ethics of the elves using this ring. One of the really great parts of this season is we see Elrond specifically, who is just kind of going, guys, I'm not sure about these rings, and I don't think we should be putting all of our faith into them. Yeah, exactly. And we begin to see Annatar, Sauron, put his influence into these rings as the rings for the dwarves are made, as the rings for men are made. And I think potentially the best part of this season is Annatar and Celebrimbor making these rings. And oh my god, it was so captivating. I think that Charlie Vickers as Sauron is impeccable casting. I remember last time I wasn't sure about the Sauron reveal. You know, Halbrand, I have never been more wrong in my entire life.
I would like to revert those opinions that I've made 2 years ago. Because, we were pissed out. This was the reveal. Like, oh my god, this is Sauron, this guy that Galadriel was liking. But what they've done, to get into spoilers, is that they've opened with Sauron's backstory. It was great to look into the motivations behind Sauron and how much he's been backstabbed. He was about to be like a god, but then we got backstabbed by Adar. And it's great to see him grow from a normal person to become something else. And it's early beginnings to see a character that try to have influence on other characters as well. And it's great to have the psychological effect, especially the tragic character Celebrimbor, which was so heartbreaking to see all the way throughout the season. He is such a fascinating character because his motivations were so pure that he wanted to build his craft and to help Middle Earth. To have someone else see him working on his craft means a lot to him. Something like, wow, someone can see my craft, I can work on this and save Middle Earth. But then he gets manipulated by Sauron, and it was just so sad to see him just being torn apart to which is reality or which is fiction. And he sacrificed a lot into making those rings, and it had the willpower to get rid of the rings as well. Absolutely brilliant. That captivated me all the way throughout the season.
Yeah, I mean, that's what every inventor would love, is to help people to change the world. And the fact that Celebrimbor gets this chance, and you have Annatar, who he believes is a gift from the Valar, who says, I believe in you, and I genuinely think that you can save everyone. To go from that, then to go through all that torture, is brilliant. I really, really enjoyed that angle of it. And Charles Edwards in that performance is so heartbreaking, because we know exactly what's going on here. And to see the main Elven Smith, Mirdania, who doesn't believe him, and it ends up with her getting thrown off the wall during the fight of Eregion, it's so brutal to watch. And I remember I bumped into a lecturer of mine, this is before the season had ended and he hadn't watched it yet, and he just said to me, have they done Celebrimbor's death from what Tolkien wrote? And I was like, I don't know, he's not dead yet. I knew that he was gonna meet his demise, and he just said to me, well, I hope they do, because when Tolkien writes you a good death, you have to use it. And my god, did they use it. Being shot by a dozen orc arrows and then being stabbed with a massive spear and lifted up onto the air, it's brutal. And if you know the lore, further on down the line, Sauron uses Celebrimbor as a banner when he invades Lindon, which is even more brutal. I hope we get to see that one day. But it's just something else to see this person at the end finally regain all of his strength enough to not succumb to Annatar and to not give him exactly what he wants. And also in his final moments, he says, I know exactly what's going to happen to you. You are going to have your defeat, and you will
you're
never
gonna be their prisoner as well.
Yeah, exactly. Really, you will never truly be the Lord of the Rings. That is just phenomenal.
He said the thing. Lord of the Rings. As I said before, you get to see things that come up into Lord of the Rings. It's like the doors to go into the Mines of Moria.
Yeah.
That is great foreshadowing. Hundreds of years into the Lord of the Rings, we barely got into this whole world. Fantastic. That was the highlight for me, the making of the rings, and how the rings have so much corruption into the dwarves heavily. Durin's story was really interesting, how he fell from being with his father, who was king, to being just a mine worker, and trying his best to help his father, but his father doesn't really see eye to eye with the whole situation that's going on in Middle-earth. It is fantastic to see storytelling when power succumbs the king, because he falls down onto the ring and he wants more power. It's just so interesting to see how the rings come together, like with the 3, the 9 as well. It's like, oh my god, it's so cool.
Yeah,
it's so cool.
It's great because in season 1, it's very much like, okay, the elves' light is dying. What can we do? Is Mithril the answer? You know, yada, yada, yada. And that culminates in the rings. And this season, it's like, okay, when the dwarves have their issue, do rings again, sorted. And like, it's really interesting to see the elves call upon Durin, and Durin's like, I don't know about this. I don't trust Annatar.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want to speak to my best bud, Elrond. And ultimately, they accept these rings, and we see the corruption going for Durin the Third. And obviously, the physical manifestation of that is the Balrog. And I love Durin the Third's final moments where he finally kind of breaks free of the spell of the ring, and he just says to his son, he's like, you are strong enough. You can be king. And so to show that, what I really appreciated is that every side of the story, every species is layered and given new level of depth. And I think I love that across this whole series. I mean, the dwarves, they're not just greedy and grumpy. They're loving, and the greed of some faces pushback from others. Like, Durin the Third is very greedy when he has the ring on, and he wants to dig deeper and deeper and find more riches. But that's not the story of every dwarf. That's just his story. In a lot of Middle-earth media, we believe that all dwarves are this way. But no, this gives them more layers. We get that all around you. The elves, they're not just fair and perfect. They're flawed and divided among themselves. And we see how men, they deal with their own loss and faith, and we see Harfoots and how their wandering ways came to be, and we see orcs. Maybe most importantly, orcs are not just evil, but they're lost and they want someone to follow, someone who loves them. And I think that these layers, they bring so much to the show, and they also add things to the other films and the other books as well. And I think that this series is a real treat for Middle-earth fans, and if you're one of the Middle-earth fans who doesn't like it for whatever reason, you're missing out.
A thought came to my mind when I was watching this show, where you get to see the orcs, you get to see other species, and I wonder if fate or some sort of causality causing this whole thing, like Sauron trying to reclaim his power but also trying to become more powerful. You do get to see this idea of fate as well when the stranger, well, later on he's revealed as Gandalf. We were right.
It was really funny to me to see people still saying, oh my god, the stranger is finally revealed, and it's like, guys, revealed at the end of season 1. Come on, like,
he said
the thing about smelling the air, like, come on.
Anyway, so the whole idea of fate, meeting Tom Bombadil, and then he's like, was I supposed to find you? And it's like all about destiny, all about trying to find his purpose. Is he going to fight Sauron, or is he going to help his friends? To me, that is so interesting when you look into Lord of the Rings with Frodo's fate. Is it his purpose to save the Shire or rest of Middle Earth? Once you think about all the species and all the things that come into play into the whole story, Sauron is merely a player, or like a prisoner to this whole fate. Like, he's trying to fight back for it. And that, to me, that is fascinating to see that he's trying to have an influence on other people, influence on the orcs, influence on the elves and the dwarves as well. So to me, he's the only active character. He's trying to fight back this causality, but it keeps affecting him time and time again.
Yeah, I mean, that's brilliant. I think a lot of Tolkien is all about this shadow is but a passing thing. It's the idea of light will always triumph over dark. And I just love how this show expresses that. We see it in so many different ways. You know, we get to explore the Ents a little bit in this season and how they react to trees being cut down. And we have a beautiful moment where Arondir compares that to his own feelings of loss and how new trees can grow and light can continue. And with the stranger, with Gandalf. I mean, first of all, can I just say, Ian McKellen is such perfect casting as Gandalf, and you'd always think no one else could do it in any way. And once again, I'm so happy to be proven wrong, because Daniel Wayman as Gandalf is phenomenal. Obviously, last season we got a lot of him as the stranger. He was very confused. But now seeing him as Gandalf and seeing him as this whimsical guy with a twinkle in his eye and who loves his friends and has this power beneath him, but we see him as a younger Gandalf, and I really loved that about him. And I loved, you know, as you're saying, he kind of discovers that he can help fight the darkness through the small moments of light, through the small moments of joy, what the Harfoots show him. Just like what he says in The Hobbit in the movie, where he says, I found that it's the small deeds of everyday folk that keep the evil at bay. We kind of see the origin of that, and it's brilliant. And remind me, have you read any of the books?
Well, I've only parted through with the Silmarillion, so I haven't got really into detail into the books. But yeah, do tell me.
Well, obviously, everyone knows about Tom Bombadil. He's super famous because he's just not in the movies, and they absolutely nailed it. I tell you what, Rory Kinnear as Tom Bombadil is such a treat. He kind of speaks in riddles and he doesn't ever really tell you any proper thing, and how he vanishes or the singing of the woman, and Gandalf's like, who was that? And he's like, what do you mean? He's just such a brilliant guy who, you know, speaks to the nature and just wanders his own path. And there is nothing better that embodies Tom Bombadil in this show than the music. The song Tom Bombadil, which Gandalf and Tom end up singing at the end, is magic. It's pure magic. Fantastic. I just want to say Bear McCreary,
the goat. Yes! The goat.
Yeah.
He cooked with the score. He makes it so adventurous but also enlightening. Like when the trees in I forgot the place where the trees that turn into gold, and then it was like Lindon. Oh my god,
in Lindon.
Yeah, in Lindon. Yeah. That was a magical moment. There's so many magical moments in the show that the music just enhances even further. It is magic. It is truly magic when you go into the show.
It's true. If you have any interest in film soundtracks, TV soundtracks, gotta listen to this, because his score for season one and season two is so brilliant. I mean, to follow up Howard Shore's work on the first six films, I mean, that's one thing, but to do it so well, to craft such unique sounds for every kingdom, every character, is brilliant. I mean, I've listened to the season one score so many times, and the way that McCreary uses light motifs for each character and species, and he takes them all further this time, it's nothing short of magnificent. Mm. You see a character appear and you hear their theme play triumphantly, or maybe you hear it softly in a small loving moment, or even in a tragic way as they experience pain. I mean, it's phenomenal. There were times I was on the verge of tears, and the music just so much to fan the fires of those emotions, to really tug at the heartstrings, especially after, you know, at this point we spent a lot of time with the characters. One of the big pains of this season is that the actor who played Bronwyn couldn't return. So Nazanin Bodiadi, who I think I'm saying the name right, apologies if I'm not, she couldn't return, scheduling conflicts this season, and that's a real big shame, because her romance with Arondir, especially on rewatch, is, you know, such a sweet part of season one and such a beautiful thing to behold. It's so tender, it's so sweet. And also she takes up this leadership and she's in the mother role for Theo. It's brilliant. And so when we open on these characters in season two, we get the funeral pyre for her, and that piece of music, as we see the characters, so much emotion in their hearts. You know, Arondir is feeling so many things, and Theo as well, and their lives come crashing down around them as the embers of the fire goes out into the night, and we hear elements of her theme within this beautiful piece that Bear McCreary has written. It just does so much to expand this whole thing. And yeah, I mean, I love it so much.
That is a magical moment to remind you of characters in the motifs as well. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's like that reminder of like how you felt towards those characters as well. But yeah, brilliant nonetheless. It's just like how they've managed to do all of this with the locations and with the sets and the props. I do have a bit of a few issues. Maybe I'm just being a bit nitpicky, but it felt a bit convoluted. Like when I was focusing on the story with Celebrimbor, I was like heavily invested into it. And then I forgot about these other storylines that were kind of happening as well, like the journey with the stranger, the whole storyline with Isildur. So it's like these storylines that were happening, and it felt like that one was more like the importance for the rings and stuff. I wish there was like a better way to balance it, but it doesn't a great way to balance it. I mean, season one does it excellent, how they balanced what's going on with the story and focusing on the characters.
Yeah, I had the same issue with this season and of season one as well. And again, when I rewatched season one, a lot of those issues melted away for me. I want to stress, if season one didn't work for you first time around, you know, anyone listening, give it a rewatch, because it really was much better. But I think just like season one, the season gets better as it progresses, and especially as the different narrative strands develop and begin to cross over. Like Arondir goes from being with all the survivors of the Southlands to being in Eregion with all the rest, and by the end when they're in the Valley of Imladris, which will become Rivendell, which is really cool, with Galadriel, with Gil-galad, with Elrond, and they're all standing on the, you know, brilliant end to the season. But this series 100% has a structural issue. I mean, it's unclear how much time passes. You know, we don't know exactly how long characters have been apart or journeying, or how long it takes to get from one city to the next. It's a lot all at once. I mean, it's a problem that can also be leveled against the Lord of the Rings film. But I think where this falls is that there's just more going on, like you said, more elements, more ends to the string. So just like in season one, we get episodes where we don't see certain characters at all, and plot threads that are left in stasis while others power 4, and it's like, we didn't see Numenor until episode 3. And I was just there just like, I want to know what's going on with Numenor. And like, you know, it took ages to get to that point. You know, obviously they did air episodes 1, 2, and 3 on the same day. And so it's up to the viewer how long you wait before you see that. But still, it's like two episodes where we don't get to see that time. And I think that, yeah, like in season 1, as I said earlier, they made the rings in one episode. And it seemed like it was about the space of an afternoon. But then in this season, in episode 1, they say that took 6 weeks. And it's like, okay, wait, sorry, like maybe I missed something, but it was just a bit confusing. And I hope that as the plot lines converge in the future of the show, the seasons become more tighter and this problem goes away, because it makes the flow a little bit sporadic. It's not a massive issue. I was still really, really, really invested the whole time. But I do think that it was something that we kind of bumped heads with it a couple of times.
I thought I was the only one. Yeah, I'm just really excited for the future.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the other storylines that we haven't touched on yet. I want to go back to the Stranger a little bit and talk about that whole journey. I really enjoyed how we get to see the origins, almost like the first tribe, I guess, of the Harfoots before they started wandering. There's a really cool connections back to the song This Wandering Day and the meaning behind that. I'm really happy that they didn't reunite Nori with the rest of the Harfoots. I think that is going to be a beautiful, beautiful reunion at some point, hopefully way down the line, and we'll see them get back together and it will be beautiful and heartfelt and touching. I was a little bit disappointed that Poppy came back so soon. Why did they just say goodbye if she was going to come straight back? It felt a little bit odd to me. But
yeah,
it is really fun to see Gandalf just wandering around with his two Harfoot friends and them all having this adventure with another wizard as well. I really like that side of the story.
Yeah, that story did have like a heartfelt side to it as well. We got all the balance for the undertones, the things that are going on, like with some really depressing things from Celebrimbor, but going on to here with Gandalf and with the Harfoots. Again, the thing with Lord of the Rings is that there are some rich emotions that go into it, and it's got to have moments that feel powerful, home-like, and it just makes you feel comfortable. And you know, with like the Harfoots and Gandalf, really reminded me of the moments that felt so touching, and it just felt like really happy to see those characters, which is so heartfelt and just so nice.
Yeah, that is amazing. And on the other side of that, as I say, I was looking forward to see what was going on in Numenor. It's really interesting what they'd set up in season 1, and what's most interesting in that is that it's a real struggle for a lot of the characters to find hope. I was just so gripped by the idea that a lot of the Numenoreans were not happy with Miriel and her decision to take them to Middle-earth, and the whole usurping of the throne that Tharizon does, and his little shithead of a son, Kemen, who, what a brilliant acting, because the actor for this role, he made him so hateable, and Valandil's death is just heartbreaking. He was one of the ones who stayed true to himself and stayed true to who we know are the good guys, Miriel, Elendil, and he stabs him. He literally stabs him in the back. It was so depressing. But I loved the kind of struggle of Numenor is going down a really dark route, and all the people who are loyal to Miriel are being hunted down, quite literally. Elendil is one of them. Even his own daughter is feeling that kind of struggle of who to fight. And I enjoyed going deeper into, you know, sometimes it's not as easy as light and dark. It really is those gray areas, and some people just want power.
That's the thing in Lord of the Rings about power. I think that was intriguing how they've done conflict of finding leadership with the Queen, Muriel, and then Elendil, who loses his son, and it's just so heartbreaking for him trying to find purpose in this as well. Like, he can't have his army anymore, and his power is stripped away. So, yeah, going against with the Queen was also interesting. Like, she has the elvish ball. There's so many phrases in this.
The ball. She's got the ball. The Palantir. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. There's so many things.
Like how many? I think there's supposed to be 5 in total or something. So it's interesting that's already 5, an element exploring. And obviously in episode 8, Elendil gets Narsil, the sword that will eventually cut the ring from Sauron's hand and then will be reforged into Anduril that Aragorn wields. That's brilliant. Again, there's so many things that connect back to Lord of the Rings, but it's given meaning. It's not just like, hey, Elendil, here's a sword. It's like, no, you need to find your way to keep on fighting and to believe in your cause. You cannot lose hope, and I want you to take this sword, and I want you to remember that you are a captain. I want you to leave Numenor and find the people who can bring about this light again. I think that is so fantastic.
Yes. The bit in the sea was also interesting with the massive sea creature that we thought Mirio was going to get her demise with, the sea creature that was about to say that she's innocent or that she's guilty, which was interesting because have we ever seen sea creatures before in Middle Earth?
Yes, there is the Watcher in the Water outside of the Mines of Moria, and that is some kind of sea creature. It's a massive
it's so amazing to see that world building. It was a great way to explore more that we haven't seen on screen. Tolkien might have mentioned in the books about the sea. Last season, we did see how the elves wanted to go to what was the place again?
Valinor.
Oh my god, there's so many. Again, this just shows how creative the man was. Think about the languages, thinking about the locations.
It's always so funny to me that he was like, I think I'm going to create a language. And then he created the language and he was like, might as well write some lore as well. Like, he didn't write it and then make the language. He was like, he started the language, and it's so cool. And yeah, I think it's interesting how Farazon is chosen as king because of the eagle who arrives. But then Miriel passes the sea creature test. And it's quite funny that it's like, aha, I've got an eagle, so I'm king. And she's like, well, I've got this sea creature, so I'm queen. What's going to determine who wins? Is it going to be like some kind of massive ant that's going to come out and just be like, I choose you? It's going to be interesting actually to see how that converges.
Pokemon, it'll be like Pokemon all over again.
Oh my god, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how the Numenor story ends, how it collides. You know, obviously Miriel had the vision of the Great Wave. We are going to see Numenor in defeat, and we're going to see the last alliance between men and elves. I think that's going to be really, really compelling as we continue. But we also have Isildur as well, who Elendil and Eärion still don't know is alive, and that's really interesting because that informs their actions a lot. Eärion specifically, who is really driven by this grief for her brother, and she does a lot of questionable things, especially towards her own father, but also she's kind of very torn.
Yeah,
and I think it's really compelling to explore that. But also one of the really interesting things about this season is Adar, and he meets his demise as well, and it's really compelling just to see that basically all he ever really cared about was making a life for the orcs and for ridding Sauron, because he knew that Sauron would use them. It's really interesting just to see that orcs aren't pure evil, they want things too.
Adar had a stronger presence in this one, and you could really, really see that he wanted to stop Sauron, especially at the beginning of the show. He overthrows Sauron, and when people talk about the good and light and stuff, you want to understand both sides, and people are like, oh no, the orcs are evil, blah blah blah, blah. I'm like, well no, you gotta understand, they have families, you know, they have home, and Sauron has influenced those orcs as well, and that lead to more destructive things. I think it's just fantastic that we get to build upon that and see how Sauron has built his way up from being really weak to becoming kind of powerful. I'm really glad how they've handled that with Sauron in terms of like power scaling, because you know, you thought like Sauron is like, oh, he's really powerful, but I'm really glad you get to see that deception with Celebrimbor. He thinks he's living a really peaceful time building rings, but in reality there's a whole fight that's happening. I think that's a great way to show off his power.
Yeah, the thing that makes Sauron so compelling as a character, because obviously Sauron hasn't really been a character. He's not a character in Lord of the Rings. He's just a nameless threat. You know, we meet many orcs, we meet Saruman, but Sauron himself is larger than life, and that does make him terrifying. And in this, we see that his real power is in his words. Sauron the Deceiver is the perfect name. I love that line in episode 8 after Celebrimbor's death when he says, I have many names. Again, with a tear in his eye, because he realizes this is almost a truth in what Celebrimbor said about him always being a slave to the rings. He understands that actually kind of the guy has a point a little bit. I loved all of that, and I also love how obviously the end of season 1 we see him going to Mordor, but he doesn't start this season as like, I'm Sauron, let's get to it. Instead, he knows that the thing that he needs to do is build these rings, and also he can benefit from still keeping this mystery with Adar, not revealing his identity. And I love the poetry of the way that Adar dies is pretty much exactly the way that Adar tried to kill Sauron at the beginning of the season.
Yes.
Really, really brilliant. Yeah. The way that it is poetic, the way that Sauron managed to convince all these orcs to turn on their master, somebody who actually did genuinely care about them. Sauron's like, no, I'm the one who cares, and then proves he doesn't by killing Glug. again, Sauron is at the center of this season, and Charlie Vickers is amazing. Even in the way that he looks, the makeup and the costuming makes him look really sinister. And there are so many moments where he will flip a switch. Like, there's the brilliant moment when Galadriel and Sauron are finally fighting. They finally are reunited, and he flicks into Halbrand mode. But he doesn't look quite right. He doesn't look quite like she remembered him. And I thought that was really effective, the way that he kind of just like worms his way into her mind as well. She has an interesting conflict this season where she kind of feels, like I said earlier, the elves are unsure whether accepting these rings is the right thing. And of course, it has helped them restore their light. But Galadriel has this whole thing of, is Sauron still in my head? Were the feelings that I harbored for him, where are they coming from? And that is really interesting to see from her.
Yeah, with the whole power with the ring as well. It's funny when you look back at The Hobbit, where Galadriel fights Sauron.
Yeah.
You get to see that whole relationship that span across hundreds of years. And it's such a devastating thing for Galadriel to have that feeling for that person, and then trying to figure out the power and trying to save lives is also a great conflict to figure out. What can she do to fight against Sauron, and can she trust those feelings? And what's so cool, once you look back at like the rings, I think it's crazy to think about, like, that Sauron was kind of the one that implemented the idea of the rings. That's interesting that he's been plotting this.
Yeah, and also Celebrimbor thinks he's using the Mithril, but it's actually Sauron's own blood. And each time the rings are made, we get more and more influence from Sauron. That is phenomenal to watch. And I think it's going to be interesting to see who gets the rings, which men are going to get the rings. Because obviously the men were the ones who are corrupt the most. And obviously there's plenty of theories about who means what and all this stuff. And I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see just where that stuff's going to go. Again, letting the showrunners cook, letting this story expand. It's going to be phenomenal. I think it's also brilliant at the end how Sauron has Celebrimbor's hammer, which I think is pretty much guaranteed he will use to make the One Ring. That is kind of brilliant and kind of terrifying. Yeah. And also, it's another layer of tragedy for Celebrimbor as a character and what Sauron did to him. I think that is all so great. And that conflict for Galadriel, for the elves, for all the characters, it carries them throughout the season. And the fact that the end is like, we're gonna take a stand, you know, it felt like Avatar Way of Water, where at the end Jake says, this is where we're gonna take our stand. They're in Imladris. They're gonna be like, okay, we've lost Eregion, we're gonna come back stronger than ever. But we've got some interesting stuff heading into next season as well, like Elrond and Durin, I think, gonna have some interesting things to talk about as well. One of my favorite scenes was when those two characters reunited, because they were my favorite characters in season one. The music played and Durin was like, where the hell have you been? And Elrond's like, oh, I've been having my own adventures. And then the whole time during the battle, Elrond's like, the dwarves are gonna come. Really great tension building. And that week in between episode 7 and 8, it was just like I was on tenterhooks. It was brilliant. I love this show. I can't wait for another season.
Yeah, me too. You know what's really funny is that the Balrog appeared at each of the season finale.
Yeah. The Balrog's like, wait, hold on.
I want to see what's going on at the end of each season.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we've seen the Balrog in the trailer for the first season.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh my God, it's the Balrog. And we saw the Balrog at the end of the season. And then we're like, okay, what's going to happen to the Balrog? And the Balrog fights Thorin.
This whole show is like dramatic irony to show, because the audience knows exactly what's going to happen.
Yes.
You know, Sauron will make the One Ring. He will kill Elendil and meet his demise at Isildur's hand. We know that the Balrog is going to decimate Khazad Dûm, which will become Moria. All these things are going to happen. We knew that Celebrimbor was going to die. We know that Numenor is going to fall. And what's the most interesting part is how all these things come together. There are so many things that to the audience is like massive red flag. It's like the Balrog's going to fuck everything up. But the characters are like, hey, it's a bit of Mithril down here. Let's go and mine it. It's just like brilliant to see all this stuff happen.
Yeah.
I love it.
Everything unfolding is great. Mm. And the ghosts as well. I forgot what they're called.
Oh, yeah, the Barrow-wights. Yeah, we get to see them.
The Barrow-wights, yeah. Excellent. I was really hyped for them.
Really cool
design, and the trees and the trolls and all the things that the creatures come to life as well.
It's just so fantastic to explore all of this. And also we get a little bit more with Deesa's singing to the rocks thing. And I love Deesa as a character. I love how in this season she's not just Durin's wife, she has agency, she has her own like stakes and everything, but also she can basically cause a bunch of bats to, like, if she sings to the rocks at the correct frequency, like what can she
do. I love all these things that I wouldn't have considered.
Yeah.
And so obviously we have season three basically is on its way. But also we've got The War of the Rohirrim, the anime film coming out later this year. We've got more films in development like The Hunt for Gollum. And it seems like we're almost certainly going to be getting seasons 3, 4, and 5 of this show. It's a good time to be a Lord of the Rings fan. I'm feeling really optimistic about it.
It's a good time. I'm more intrigued about the TV show. I don't know how they're going to do Book of Gollum. Not Book of Gollum. the Book of Boba Fett. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's the entire plot of the Book of Boba Fett, except Gollum's there.
Yeah, Gollum. You'd be like...
I love it. I love it.
I don't know. I don't know what's going to go. Anyway.
You felt like you could do the Gollum impression. You were like...
I could do the Gollum impression, and then Gollum would be like, my precious, and into the galaxy with his armor, you know, with the Boba Fett armor, and just trying to wear that. Yeah. So I'm so excited for the future, because this was just excellent. I loved the writing in this one. The dialogue felt, there was something like an excellent tone to it. It just felt right. It had charm, it had wit, but also really depressing things as well with Celebrimbor. But yeah, excellent show.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. So what are you going to give Rings of Power season 2 out of 10?
A 9.
Yeah, I got to agree. I think we're so lucky to have this show.
They cook so hard.
I can't believe you have to wait a year. Wait, no. 2 years for season 2. It's ridiculous. Somebody help me.
It's painful, but at least there's a whole bunch of things to watch. But also, if you're just so intrigued and into the show, you're like, but I want more of this. This is so interesting to see.
It really is. But we will wait. We'll be here. We'll be waiting.
We shall be patient. We shall be patient, yes.
Like the Autobots, we will be here and we will be waiting. Speaking of Autobots, next week we're doing Transformers 1, which I've heard so much about. It hasn't released in the UK yet. Oh no, it has by the time this video has come out. I'm so excited to finally dive into that. You can send us an email at outoftimefilmpod@gmail.com. Yeah. We'll be recording next Saturday, so let us know your thoughts on Transformers 1 by then. We'll answer it right here in the podcast next week. And also, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed it, if you're listening on YouTube, you can like and subscribe. If you want to see more, and if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy.
I'm really looking forward to Transformers 1 and other anime films as well.
We are also doing the Wild Robot as well a few weeks after Transformers, which is going to be great.
Yes, and you can follow us on Instagram at Out of Time Film Pod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Asbel, on Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me as well, and TikTok to see edited clips, visual, all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts, and you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to LJN's Mayor for the excellent theme, and Ron and Phillips for vocals as always. And I think that's everything. What an excellent show! Please watch it. It's great. I do hope Acolyte does get the same treatment as well in the future. That was so uncalled for what Disney's doing. But yes, take what you're given.
Give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.